and welcome to the Trust Your Body Project. Trust Your Body Project is a podcast and social media movement designed to help you heal, eat, and create space for the things that truly matter. I'm your host, Whitney Catalano. I'm an anti-diet, health at every size registered dietitian, helping you stop dieting, make peace with your body, and take the power back from your inner bully.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to episode number 18. Oh my God. Hey, this is me in editing. I definitely meant to say it's the 30th episode. It's because it's for sure not the 18th episode, but it was too funny to take out. So there you go. I'm fine. On today's episode, I am talking to Erin Flores, who is a registered dietitian, a body trust provider in Los Angeles, and he's the first guy I've had on the show. So I'm really excited about that. We talk about gender and body image and how he goes about helping men with body image versus his co-ed groups or, you know, whatever, and how it's different, how it's the same. As a little hint, he says it's mostly the same, but there's another element to take into consideration in terms of vulnerability and all of that. So he really gets into it. And I'm very, very happy that he agreed to come on. He is so well-spoken, has like arguably the best podcast voice of anyone who has been on my podcast. So the minute he started talking, I kind of get like almost flustered because he sounds like a radio talk show host. Like it just, I mean, he has a podcast as well, but you know what I mean? It's just like he could do voice acting. His voice is that good for podcasting. So that was awesome because I was like, the quality of this episode is gonna be top notch. But before we get into all of that, this podcast is not yet, but as of next week, will be brought to you by Club TYB. So Club TYB, what is it? For those of you who have been following me for a while, you probably know what it is. It's my membership site where you can go on and get answers to a bunch of questions. I do live streams every month, so I do at least one live stream, if not two, where I talk about a specific topic in depth. And there's a place where you can submit questions or submit, you know, whatever for me to answer as a topic. And then I also do one guest live stream per month on a specialty topic, something that I'm not particularly specialized in. So in the month of October, I talked to Lindsay Hall, who was on the podcast, you know, right before I took the break. We talked about the Weight Watchers Curbo app. So I talked to her about drunkorexia, and it was honestly one of the most interesting conversations I've had in terms of, I had no idea what drunkorexia was, so I learned a lot. And then hearing it, it made so much sense. It was just really eye-opening, honestly. And we talked about, you know, that trope in society or whatever about, I'll just drink my calories, you know, that thing that people say, and how that's harmful and all of this. So it was honestly one of my favorite live streams that I've done so far, and I'm going to keep having guests on. I'm also changing the group as it goes, but I have had the group actually closed since I originally launched it because I wanted to put some of the stuff to the test and I wanted to make changes, and it's actually evolved a lot. It's definitely more Facebook oriented than it was. We do weekly journaling prompts, we do weekly wins, all of these things, and it's a community for you to continue your healing journey amongst other people, because the healing journey and the health at every size anti-diet journey can be very isolating when you're surrounded by people who are on diets. And this is meant to provide a safe space where you can talk about the things you're struggling with or vent about the people in your life or really whatever, just learn more around other people who are also doing the same. Club TYB is going to be open continuously. So that's why this podcast is brought to you by Club TYB. It is not open as of the day that this podcast is coming out. It won't be open. Should be open by Friday unless, you know, something unexpected happens, I guess. So I'm really hoping to just get it open on Friday. So look out on my Instagram for that. And then the next podcast episode, I will officially announce and say that the podcast is brought to you by Club TYB. So it will be. And I hope you join me. Let me know if you have any questions. You can email me at podcast@winniecatalano.com, or you can email my assistant Lindsay at support@winniecatalano.com. She has been a huge part of me being able to run Club TYB because she just helps me with all of the, you know, getting my brain together basically and all of the small tasks and things. So I'm eternally grateful for her. She is the reason why I'm able to have this group open and support all of you in this way. And I'm really, really excited to meet everyone who decides to join. Please, please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I love your reviews. I know I haven't read the names of people who have reviewed in a while, and I will start doing that, I promise, probably in a few episodes, just because I completely lost track of where I was at. So go leave those reviews, and then I'm going to catch up. I'm going to do a big catch up, and you're all going to be bored of it, but you may hear me your name, which is awesome, I think, I hope. As always, I am taking new one-on-one coaching clients, so I don't just work with women. I think that's a big misconception that people have of me because my brand is so pink, but I work with all people. So if you are ready to heal your relationship with food and heal your relationship with your body, really, and take the power back from your body and get out there and start doing the things and living your life in the way that you know you could be living if you weren't so held back by insecurities, like, that is what I'm all about. And I really want to help you be on your own team in every sense of the term. This is obviously easier said than done. It requires a lot of that inner work, a lot of that looking at childhood, looking at the situation that got you here and healing that stuff, which is a heavy process, but I am here to walk beside you and support you every step of the way and push you to do things that are a little outside your comfort zone and really just be here as a non-judgmental, compassionate sounding board, I guess, and support system for you so that you can learn how to be compassionate with yourself. I'm just mirroring what you are trying to learn. And that in itself can be one of the most powerful experiences you have, just because we're all so hard on ourselves and we're so critical of other people if we're critical of ourselves. So you may notice the people in your life who struggle with insecurities that happen to be pretty hypercritical of others and of you. And it makes it scary to talk about the things that are, you know, bringing you down, like your body image, or to talk about your own internal criticisms and your internal dialogue. So that is why I am here. If you would like to apply for coaching, I actually just updated my entire booking page. So whitneycatalano.com/book. That's whitneycatalano.com/book. You will see that at the top, there's like a little blurb of how it all works. And then underneath, I have a couple of examples of the different types of people that I work with, just based on the different types of people that I've worked with. If you don't see yourself in any of these examples, it doesn't mean that I don't work with you. It just means that maybe there is a variation. You have a unique story, you know? Like, these are just examples. They're kind of tropes, if you will, of general themes I see amongst clients, but it's not, you know, anyone specific. And this is just to connect with you a little more and let you know that I do a lot of different kinds of work, not just struggling with binge eating and then you need healing, right? Like, I do a lot of mental and emotional anxiety work or confidence work that is a little bit separate from your relationship with food. And I help a lot of people with their relationship with food. So that is a really long way of saying go to my website, whitneycatalano.com/book. I'm taking on new clients. I will support you throughout the holidays and help you start off the new year with an excitement for being on your own team and setting intentions for how you want to grow next year. And I think that can be a really beautiful gift to give yourself for the holidays. So come let me know. Let's book a free call, shall we? All right, a quick disclaimer that the information in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. I think that's it. Honestly, this interview really speaks for itself. Could not be more excited for you to hear this. I had such a fun time talking to him. I think he's awesome. And I hope you go check him out on all of his social media. I think he mentions it at the end, and I'll link to everything in the show notes. So without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, so today we're talking to Erin Flores, who is a registered dietitian nutritionist based in Los Angeles. With over 10 years of experience, Erin has worked with eating disorders in a variety of settings. He is a certified body trust provider, and he focuses on intuitive eating and health at every size in his part-time work at the Center for Discovery and part-time work in private practice in Calabasas. So thank you, Erin, for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you, Whitney, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I wanted to have you on because I wanted to talk about a few different things. One, I get a lot of questions about why are there so many women in this field and not enough men, because there's a lot of men who struggle with their body image and struggle with disordered eating as well. And then two, I wanted to talk to you because I'm really interested in the fact that you're a certified body trust provider. Because I looked them up and thought about going through their certification. So I wanted to just hear more about it.
Yeah, of course.
But first, I'm curious about how you got into this work.
Can I curse on this podcast?
Oh, please.
Yeah. Okay. Just probably like a lot of other folks who got into nutrition, I had my own shit with food growing up. I had always struggled with food in various different ways. I had seen my first dietitian when I was 15 and didn't really do anything she told me, and really hated every minute of it. But I went anyway because my family suggested I should go. Looking back on it, there was nothing wrong with my body then. It was maybe a little bit bigger than what was the norm, but it wasn't large or considered like fat in any sort of way. So fast forward to college, I went to school and I like finally had no food rules. And I liked college, but I didn't love it. So definitely food became a comfort tool. And I ate and didn't like school and ate and gained weight and was really sedentary. But like really just because like food was my friend, right? Food was a coping tool and it was like, it was there for me. I dropped out of college, moved back to LA and moved into like video game world, hated my job. And one day in the midst of all this hating my job, I woke up and I said, I'm going to do all of that stuff that dietitian taught me when I was 15. And I did. My weight changed and I got a lot of praise, as one does in diet culture when you change your body shape. But I was also exhibiting total eating disorder behavior. I was obsessively exercising. I was like so anxious about my food. I would miss out on certain things because I was worried about what to eat there. I was, eating large food groups and a lot of anxiety if I did eat them. Constant praise. And the world treated me differently. And it was in that sort of mindset that I didn't like this job in the video game industry. And I was like, I need to do something else. I think I'm going to be a dietitian. And I came to this work to tell everyone how to lose weight. And I was going to be... I was going to be Richard Simmons, and that's really was my focus. I was very weight loss focused when I started school and even through school until I got my first job at the VA. And slowly things radically changed because now I practice from a completely different perspective that feels much more comfortable to me and much better to my clients. But it took me reading intuitive eating, doing a lot of supervision with Elise Resch here in LA, reading Health at Every Size, learning about body trust, learning about social justice, learning about weight stigma, learning about systems of oppression. And that really led me into this work where I am now.
Your story is not dissimilar from a lot of dietitians, which is ironic and unfortunate because, what you see is that a lot of dietitians don't make it to that. They don't get that layer of, oh, wait, this kind of doesn't make any sense. And let's explore what is health at every size. Like, what is weight stigma? Yeah.
And a lot of them quit.
Right.
I came back to this in my 30s. So I'm, a little bit older. I'm 47 now. And I remember a lot of folks that were interns with me back in 2006 are no longer dietitians. Like they've changed careers because they're like, this wasn't what I wanted to do, really.
Interesting. And why do you think that is? Do you have any theories on that?
For the finite group that I can think of, it's sort of similar to my experience. Like oftentimes when we're done with college, we just go into work that we think would be the right place for us. And oftentimes it's not.
Yeah. And the experience of, becoming a dietitian is such an intense schooling. It's always forward focused of you have to get into the internship and you have to do this, right, and you have to do that. And then once you're in it, you're kind of like, you finally get to stop. And I can imagine having a little bit of an existential crisis if it's not what you thought it was going to be.
Totally. It's a lot of work and a lot, like you said, a lot of stress. I mean, it's very competitive.
Yeah.
And probably, to be honest, like my grades, because all my grades from undergrad carried over to when I went back to school at 30. So my grade point average was not very good. And I got one B when I went back to school. Everything else was like all A's. I would not have gotten an internship now. There's
right.
No way. I did not have a rockin' GPA. I interviewed well, but no, I definitely don't think I would have gotten an internship now.
Yeah. The only reason I got an internship, I love to say this, is because it's a brand new internship and it was very personality driven. And my personality, I talked to the interviewer about traveling for like 30 minutes and then she was like, I think you'd be a great fit here. And I was like, I agree. That was the only reason.
You know, I sort of think the same thing on some level. Like when I interviewed at the VA, I remember it was daunting. There were 14, 15 dietitians in the room, all sort of like looking right at you. And it was a pressure cooker, but like, I think I did really well. I mean, I think that's what helped me get, you know, into this program.
Yeah. And thankfully you're here because all of the stuff led you to healing your relationship with food. So tell me a little bit about that journey for you, basically repairing what had become disordered with food.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really thankful to Elise Resch and Evelyn Tribble because they, without their book, it wouldn't have started me down this path. And so I read the book. I started to read the book in college at Cal State Northridge when I was getting a degree. And I was like, this is pooey, right? There's no way this is real. And I put it down. And then I ended up reading it again after I heard Elise Resch speak at a local dietetic event. And that was really the impetus to sort of go back and read it because she was able to articulate so much of what was in that book, but in a really like human way that no one else had done before. And I read it and I remember I wrote her an email and I said, thank you for coming to speak. Thank you for this book. I can see how impactful it can be. And she responded and said, thank you. And I would love it. You're more than welcome to come to supervision. Mm-hmm. I do it once a month and you're more than welcome. And I did. And I went for many years and it was really helpful. And for a lot of it, I really just sat there and listen. And for me, I think that was my own, group therapy on some level. I mean, that's not the intention of the group, right? But that's sort of what I used it for. It helped me look at why I was making the food choices I was making and then make changes that felt more comfortable to myself.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, it really was a snowball effect of just learning more and more about the Health at Every Size movement, how that could play into this, what activism might look like, what fat acceptance might look like, the impact of weight stigma and all of these things. And I've had to, you know, just like everyone else hopefully is doing in the profession, is my own internal work on a lot of this before I could really think about what it means to apply it with my clients.
So during this time, were you helping clients still with that sort of traditional nutrition approach?
Yeah, you know, I cringe and I tell everyone this, but like if I could go back to the VA and apologize to every vet I worked with, I would. I would like look them in the eye and apologize to them because let me explain. I was working in a weight loss program. I was really managing this weight loss program. But I was also learning about intuitive eating. And for a while, I was straddling both paradigms because I thought I could. And I realized a couple things. One is you can't. It's really impossible to. It, even though my intention was good, the impact was really harmful on the veterans because they were getting such mixed messages about this that it must have been very confusing about what to do. And I think it harmed them, you know, not with that intention in mind, but I think it did harm them. So I did. I tried to like do both for a long time and I realized I couldn't. And I want to pause for a second to also acknowledge that I had a lot of privilege.
Right.
Where, you know, my partner, she had a stable job and could give us insurance benefits. And so I could leave another full-time job to really take a leap of faith down this path. So there's an inordinate amount of financial privilege that showed up for me in doing this work. You know, it allowed me to sort of do this, to quit the VA and to say, I can't do this anymore. It's not congruent with me. I feel awful about it. It's actually really ineffective and it's making my work days harder. I need to just go all in to this mode. And that's what I did.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And especially with what you said about walking the line or straddling the line, I see people doing it. I hear things that sound like straddling the line. And I also have a, you know, brief stint when I was first becoming or starting my practice where I was not quite sure what line I wanted to go across. Like I just still hadn't figured it out.
Yeah.
And it's hard because you have to straddle the line at some point to get to the other side of the line. Like there's no, you can't just like dive right in. There is always a walking, there's a forward motion and you have to walk to the other side. And so it requires a lot of messiness in the middle. And I think people who are recovering, who have messaged me about it, like, I want to accept it, but I also have a hard time with it. No. Like they're straddling their own version of the line, not in a professional sense.
Totally.
And it's really tough because it's actually way harder to straddle the line than it is to just be on the other side. But you've got to go through that.
Well, I agree, but we've also made it through the other side to see that.
Right.
And I think for our clients, it's and professionals mm-hmm. as well. When you're in, like you said, when you're in that middle space to push through that and to really like say, I'm all in and I'm going to see just what happens. We know it feels better. We know it is more rewarding in a lot of different ways. But when you're in it, it like I remember just feeling like there's no way that this could, like I could do one or the other. Like I right. like it, this felt so safe. And again, there's a lot of privilege within that safety, right? A lot of folks don't have that privilege to sort of go to be in both worlds. Like they need right. to sort of push one way or the other.
So how did you become a body trust provider? And can you talk a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. So I became a body trust provider in 2017. I was in the second cohort mm-hmm. of their training. And I met Hillary Canavian, Dana Sturdivant through really, first I found them through social media. And then I met them face-to-face at a conference for lay people that Jess Baker, the Militant Baker, put on mm-hmm. in Tucson. And we were both presenting. We were some of the only professionals that were presenting at this conference. And it was the first time I sort of met them in person. And we sparked up a little bit of a social media friendship. We would just sort of email back and forth every now and then. And basically, when they announced this body trust certification, I was really interested. Their work had always resonated with me. I really enjoyed how their language that they used. I really enjoyed their approach. And especially this team of having a therapist and a dietitian who were in alignment, helping clients together, really also spoke to me. So when they announced the certification, I was on board from day one. I was like, I need to do this. And to be honest, the only reason I didn't the first time for the first cohort is I couldn't afford it. It's expensive. But when I finally did it in the second cohort, it's worth every penny. Mm-hmm. Like it's literally worth every penny I spent, and I had to save to do it. And it was a challenge, but it's worth it. And the reason I say it's worth it is one, it's thought out. This is not like someone put together some curriculum overnight. It's very intentional. There is a lot of thought process about where do we need to take this education in a linear sense, right? So that over a period of time, you're building on information. The depth of like different voices that come in to be able to sort of provide narratives to this work is really helpful. And I think the intention to how Hillary and Dana create this certification and then the support after is really, really amazing. And for me, more than the, maybe not more, but just as valuable as the education and the mind is the community. I feel like when I meet fellow body trust providers, it's like, we have a similar language. We have a similar understanding. It's like, I feel like I can be safer with them from the get-go, if that makes any sense. I feel like there's a lot of commonalities and I've made a lot of friends through the certification that are immensely important in my professional and personal life. So that community is really important. You know, if I were to describe what body trust is, and let me just say all of, before I say anything else, I'm in no way like paid by them to talk about
the
program.
I know, I was just about to say like, I'm in, okay, fine.
Right. But and really
you
like-
You just love it that much.
I just love it that much.
That's awesome.
It is, I would say it's talking about intuitive eating, health at every size. It brings in a lot of feminist theory. It brings in a lot of race work, a lot of oppression, anti-oppression work, a lot around weight stigma, activism, and social justice. It is about learning to not just think of the messages we've received around our body just in like one, it's not just one thing that it's impacting, it's the intersectionality of all of it and how oppressive it is. And if we're going to talk about oppression in this one way, we need to include and make space for all the other oppressions that are out there.
Right.
And I feel like this training, the certification allowed me to bring that type of conversation into my office.
Right.
Which feels right. Mm-hmm. And it feels important. And some, I'll be honest, some clients of mine have not resonated planned for them. I respect that, right? And they've said, you know, I'd rather not talk about social justice as much. Mm. And they find other folks to work with, which is great. I want them to find the person that lands with them. But for me, it does feel like a necessary conversation to include in this healing.
I agree. And I think when I have clients, because I have clients who are on both ends, they either don't particularly want to talk about it. Their sort of relationship with food, their relationship with bodies is born out a lot of trauma. And that's mainly the focus of the work that we do. And then I have a lot of clients who are also born out of a lot of trauma, like this, because it kind of, weight trauma is without a doubt like a huge driving factor for most people in who end up with disordered relationships with food and bigger bodies. Like, they get weight-based trauma at a young age, unfortunately,
from
whoever, you know. Some of those clients, and I think these clients tend to have a more, I mean, do you know what a through line is?
No, go ahead.
It's like an acting theory, basically, of like having a storyline or having a thing mm-hmm. that carries you around sure. your entire, you know, arc of what you're going through. And I found that having a social justice through line is really, really helpful because it's bigger than you. It takes it that one step further and really grounds you in like, oh, I'm part of something bigger. And do I want to participate in this or not?
No, totally. And I think I love how you said that, because that is definitely true for me. I come from a family of activists where people are, you know, I come from a family of protesters and people who are making their voice heard in many different ways. And so, you know, I've been exposed to that literally from day one. So to have that in my work feels natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So talking a little bit more about your work, because I definitely did want to touch on gender here. And like I'd said this at the beginning of the interview or like before we started, but I know you end up being a little bit of a figurehead for talking about the role of, or how, you know, men or people who are not women or don't identify as women are whatever, excluded from this conversation a lot of times on social media. And that in itself is a little bit problematic that you're like the speaker for this, but I'm hoping you'd be willing to talk about it with me.
Of course.
So what are your thoughts on this and how, because it's obvious. I mean, it's so apparent, and I get messages from people who are non-binary and men all the time being like, hey, am I allowed in your programs or, you know, and I'm like, if you can get past the pink, you're more than welcome. It's really just a color thing. I don't try to talk to just women. I don't use any of that sort of babes or for women. Like I don't use any sort of that language, but I know it's very relevant. And so what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's an interesting question. And I think, and you're right, good or bad, a lot of people ask me this question. And I think, you know, first off, the way I'm answering it, sort of, it's evolved over time. Mm-hmm. One of my current answer is I'm really asking people to make sure that you're asking other folks, not just me.
Okay.
Because here's why, because we need more narratives. Like, we need more people to sort of share their body story, not just a cisgendered, white, financially privileged male who identifies as fat.
Right.
You know, we need trans experiences. We need the non-binary experiences. We need people of color. You know, just there's so many intersections around gender and body image that we really need. And that's what I see in the female or those who identify as female narratives. There are a lot of intersections with voices to talk about body image. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the biggest difference, is that we assume that the body image experience for men is going to be a single narrative, and it's not. It's going to be really complex, varied, and depending on our intersections. So that being said, what I see is sort of like what you have already mentioned, is that men, anyone who identifies as male, non-binary, that we are having body image issues. Mm-hmm. We are definitely struggling to be in our body. And patriarchy doesn't just affect women. Patriarchy and the thin ideal affects men as well. And we get impacted by it for sure. What I find is we just don't have space to talk about it. There's no sort of like really good forum for us to make our voice heard in a safe way. Because what happens is when we do make our voice heard in this way, if it is in a place where I think the common problem is that when we do share it, especially with other folks who have the same identity, we get shot down pretty quickly. We share something vulnerable about our body, and then it's like we're open for ridicule and mocking and being teased or joked with or whatever. And so I think that tells us this is not a safe community. This is not a safe topic of conversation. I better go back to just talking about my favorite IPA and what happened in the sports game. Right. And maybe my family, right? And some other thing. But like, as soon as I touch on something really emotional, it becomes unsafe. Mm-hmm. And is, I think, because we're not socialized to really have that conversation, mm-hmm. taught how to sit with that, our own discomfort when someone says, I'm feeling uncomfortable in my body for X, Y, and Z reason. We, like, the person who's listening to that has to be able to identify that feeling somehow in themselves to build that community with the other person. Mm-hmm. And I think folks who have been raised or socialized as male are not able to, you know, we're not given that space to really exercise that muscle. So I think that's another part. And the third thing is this. I think you're right. If I go on Instagram and I search the hashtag body positivity, I only see thin white women. Yeah. And I see language that might not relate to me. But here's the interesting thing, and I'm in the midst of doing my third cohort of a men's body trust group, a virtual group for men. And I use body trust curriculum. I don't change it. Right. I don't change any wording. And the graphics, yes, are sort of maybe more female driven, right, as an aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But other than that, the language resonates. Mm. You know, the wording resonates. I think if we can sort of learn how to create that safe space, I don't think we need to change the language that much. Mm. I just think we need to make space for our male clients and those who identify as male clients to share their story and for us to listen then and to say, oh, that's a nuance here. Here's how this is, like, you know, this variant, right, is affecting you and your lived experience. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think what we just need to do is give space for more narratives and more people to speak up and share.
I'm glad that you touched on how you don't change the curriculum and you don't really tailor it because it resonates with whoever, but it's just creating that safe space to talk about it and that recognition of, you know, and that space for people to speak up, use their own voice, and that recognition that they are okay to be able to do that. Because I was curious if your approach was different for when you worked with people who identify as men versus people who identify as women or non-binary, like if you did have, if there was like caveats that you included or different things that you...
No, I really don't. And again, maybe it's because I am cisgendered male, mm-hmm. and I'm the group leader that it affords me that, you know, where I don't have to change the language and I don't have to make a concerted effort to make it different because mm-hmm. the group leader is sort of saying it from a male voice.
Right.
I think maybe that plays a part in it too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting. And I'm really glad that we talked about that. I also am glad that you're on this podcast for anyone listening, because I know that a lot of men listen to this podcast because they let me know that, you know, whether it's like someone in their life started listening to this podcast and then they just were like, what's that? Yeah, yeah. So I'm glad that they know that you do men only groups, because I think that those are rare to find as well, is just having that.
Yeah. There's none that I know of. Yeah. Body, you know, men's only body trust groups. I mean, I think I cornered the market.
Yeah. And I imagine that's pretty healing too, because like you said, it's not exactly socially acceptable or, you know, whatever, to talk about body image stuff amongst other men. And so to have a group where you're only talking about it with men, I imagine is really powerful.
You know, it's really interesting. I, every time I do a group, you know, I think like probably a lot of us, I have a lot of anxiety and a lot of like group leader fear that will I create a safe space for folks? And will they connect to this message? This group I just started, it was the first time, I guess there was one person, but no one really reached out with questions. Everyone just signed up. So I really didn't know anyone, right? It was completely like blank slate, which is awesome, right? I mean, I love it. Like people just saw whatever message got shared on their feed and were like, oh, I'm doing this. And that's all it needed, right? Which is great. But what's really amazing is, you know, as soon as the group starts, like I think so far in my experience, people do come together really quickly. People do, whether they're introverted or extroverted, and it's challenging to do like a virtual group. I find that people, even, you know, folks who might not be sharing as much are connecting with each other and like, you know, really appreciating hearing another person that they can identify with sharing a similar experience. And I think that's what makes way for the self-compassion, right? That I'm not alone in this. I'm not the only one in the world experiencing this. I you know, there's a common humanity here.
Yeah. I mean, just to quickly comment on that, I'm switching into more of a group format. I have done groups in the past. I'm about to launch a group for binge eating specifically and emotional eating. And I'm having that same fear of like, is it going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? But I do the group thing, I think is so powerful. And it's something that people actually explicitly reach out to me about. Like, I don't want to do one-on-one. I want groups. Yeah. And I think that's awesome. I'm so happy to facilitate that and happy to see other providers facilitating that as well.
Yeah. Really interesting, like the dynamic you can build in a good group for sure.
Yeah. So I did want to ask too, and this is kind of out of left field, but this is just because I just experienced a little bit of this on Twitter and I wanted to hear what your response was. So, you know, I mean, I don't think the context necessarily matters, but what ended up happening was I had a tweet go, you know, mini viral, if you will, and had in there my sentiment that diets don't work, you know? And I had a client as well, basically the same day, be like, diets don't work sounds really black and white. And I had a lot of people on Twitter responding and just being like, well, if you try hard enough and if you do it, you know, the most, if you do it hard enough, then, you know, and you're just not just lazy or whatever the like stigma is about it, a lot of different versions of it, right? Then you can accomplish it. Yeah, it's not easy and like all this stuff. So I'm curious what your response to that is and sort of addressing the nuance of, you're right, it's not black and white. For some people, they do successfully lose weight for some very, very, very small. And I use successfully like in quotes, because what is success, right? Yeah. But for a very, very small percentage, we do have that. And so I'm curious what your response to that is, if you've had clients who struggle with this idea that they're not just failures, like feeling like they're a failure for not being able to, quote, successfully diet, and basically just what your response to that would be.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not really active. And someone tried to rope me into a Twitter argument. And I was like, I'm not diving into that pool at all, because, you know, I'm too snarky and I don't like retorts back at me very much. So my automatic response is for someone to be like, you're just not trying hard enough, is like bullshit. Like just diets don't work.
Right.
And I'm going to be pretty black and white with it. Diets don't work. And for the 5 percenters, sure, they might be able to sustain weight loss over 5 years, but in the medical field, I don't consider that working. If 5% of people get a benefit from the blood pressure medication, it's not going to make it to market. That's not working. So I'm going to be pretty black and white. No, diets don't work. And the reason I sort of toe that line, and I'm happy to toe that line, I don't have any qualms about it, is exactly what you're saying. People assume that the reason the diet didn't work is because it was their fault. I failed. I just didn't try hard enough. I don't have any willpower and I was lazy and I didn't follow the plan. I knew what to do. I just didn't do it. And to that, I respectfully say, fuck that shit. And I tell people all the time, your body is not the problem. And I even have it on my business card. You didn't fail the diet. The diet failed you. Mm-hmm. And diets are inherently going to fail just because of, and it has nothing to do with what program it is or how firmly you stick to it. It's pure biology. Mm-hmm. And our bodies just have these mechanisms that are in place to, one, as soon as we restrict something, to become more obsessed with it and to slow down our metabolism so that we can store more food, burn it less efficiently, and maintain our weight, because we see weight loss as starvation. So our body fights it. And it's not, when I tell people you gained weight on after a diet or on after 5 years, you know, you gain weight, is not actually your body not working. Your body is actually working exactly how it's designed. Mm-hmm. Your body is actually working perfectly. There's nothing wrong with how your body's working. It's our mindset and our fat phobia of being afraid to live in a larger body that is getting in the way of us feeling, having a better relationship with food and feeling comfortable in our body.
Thank you for that, because that's exactly the comparison to like a medicine or something is one that I use a lot, because yeah, a 5% success rate or whatever, you know, less than 5% in some cases, yeah, is not, it's not going to make it to market.
Yeah. Like
it's,
you're not. It doesn't fit in 140 characters.
Right.
So I can't tweet that. Another thing I tell people is if diets really worked, there would be no fat people. You know, like, and there would be one diet, everyone would go on it and it would be successful. Mm-hmm. But that's not how it worked at all. There's always been body diversity. Mm-hmm. There always will be body diversity. There will always be fat people. There always have been fat people.
Yep.
And that's just how we come in different shapes and sizes. And the sooner we can wrap our head around that and embrace that, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I think part of the reason why I asked you that question is because I just wanted, I can only say things over and over again so much before I'm like, let's get some other voices to say exactly the same thing.
But I think that's really helpful for people. Exactly. You know, like I always tell my clients, like, listen, don't just listen to my podcast, listen to all these other podcasts, hear it from different voices, because mm-hmm, it makes it more real. It helps you realize it's not just some radical thing I drew up in my bedroom one night and like, yeah, you know, after a couple glasses of wine. Like, this is real stuff and it's grounded in science and it is real. And there are other people besides me who are saying this.
Exactly. Well, I really appreciate that. Is there anything else that you wanted to, anything you felt like you didn't get to say or anything you wanted to kind of comment on or promote or whatever?
Like I said, I'm on social media, right? So if you want to, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, it's all the same handle, Aaron Flores, RDN. I also have a podcast called Dietitians Unplugged with a co-host, Glennis Oyston, who's in LA also. So check out that if you enjoy anything I've been saying. Those are the best places to find me.
Yeah, I got to say, you have a great podcast voice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the first thing I noticed when you turn on your mic. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, it's funny on our podcast, sometimes like I'll come in like the DJ, like, hey, this is Aaron coming at you from Calabasas, California, you know, and Glennis always cracks up. And that's just my whole purpose is to get her to laugh. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Perfect. I know if this whole nutrition thing doesn't work out.
There you go.
Go into voice acting. Yeah, because it's exactly, not working out right now.
Yeah.
No, definitely not. Well, great. And I'm convinced. I mean, I've been toying with becoming a body trust provider for a while. Just been like sort of creeping on it from the side. And yeah, you sold me. So I know that wasn't your intention, but I'm here.
Awesome. And I think you will find that it's well worth it. Honestly, it's the best thing I've ever done personally, mm-hmm, and professionally. Like, really, it's just, I feel like it's given me a lot of tools and information and confidence.
Yeah.
In how to do this work.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate you spending some time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you, Whitney. I really appreciate it.
If you are loving the Trust Your Body Project podcast and are ready to dive headfirst into your healing transformation, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom to learn more about working with me. whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom.